Hi, Kirsty Melville here. This is Earshot. And in this episode, we're back in steamy Port Moresby for part two of our series on Papua New Guinea's national broadcaster. If you haven't heard part one, it might be worth just pausing here and going back to that one first. But right now, PNG's in the middle of its national elections. And like many other countries, it's a time when politicians hand out gifts and offer all sorts of promises. And when the rest of the media goes into a frenzy of coverage, the national broadcaster is trying to get accurate and balanced information out to those in its many remote regions.
Without media, there's a risk of thousands of Papua New Guineans not being, you know, not having access to the best kind of information that would make a difference in their lives. And with the elections coming up, it's a very critical role. It's a critical time for the media now.
But access isn't always possible given the unreliability of PNG's radio transmitters. And in a country where corruption's rampant and where natural disasters frequently hit, that's a problem. Reliable information is critical. So what happens when the national broadcaster can't be heard? Well, today producer Camilla Hannon travels to Papua New Guinea to find out. Here's part two of 800 Words for Rain.
Rain in your own talk place.
Trying to find all the different words rain. For rain.
Rain.
What is rain in your talk
place? We call it Wura.
Wura?
Wura.
In what language is that?
That's my language, Rigo.
Rigo?
Yeah.
Central
province.
Central. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, that one.
Kupa.
Kupa? Mm. What language is that?
That's Kepara language.
Kepara?
Yeah.
And where's that?
Central Magi Highway. Kehe.
In 1973, Papua New Guinea's National Broadcasting Corporation was set up by the ABC as part of the country's move towards independence from Australia. 44 years on, I arrive in the capital, Port Moresby. It's the rainy season, and the heat and humidity are overwhelming. I'm here to tune in to the NBC, to hear what has changed and what has stayed the same.
The uniqueness of what we have in our society is that Papua New Guineans can tell you certain things and then they just shut up and they don't say a single word, and then you're left totally in dark trying to work out what has transpired, and you will never know, honestly, you know.
So how are you meant to find out?
That's a good one.
Former PNG broadcaster Henry Arafai, trying to explain to me how things work in PNG. In a country of over 800 languages and cultures, the way things work is never straightforward.
90.7 FM. 5:85 AM. NBC Real PNG.
The National Broadcasting Corporation today sounds a lot like other radio stations in Papua New Guinea. Lots of pumped up voices and solid gold hits. It's PNG's main radio news service, with a national network that goes out across the country and into the villages where most people live. I'm driving around Port Moresby with Steve Massey, morning presenter with the NBC. As we travel the hot streets of Port Moresby, people stand on the median strips hawking goods. Between the cracks in the footpath, a woman harvests a crop of alpa, a peppery-type spinach. Workers cram into beaten-up minivans or PMVs, Port Moresby's bus service. Our windows are locked tight as a measure against rascals.
This guy's got earbuds, fans, electrical things. This guy's got
mangoes,
guavas.
The guavas are pretty good.
Are they? Nice.
It's 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, and out of the car radio comes this.
What time is it?
It's time for grade 5 science.
What time is it?
It's time for grade 5 science.
What time is it?
It's time for grade 5 science.
Grade 5 science.
In PNG, many children struggle to get to school, let alone stay past grade 6.
Oh, another day of school. I must hurry so that I can meet Peter and John at school.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, John and Peter.
These school broadcasts were developed by the ABC in the late 1960s to open up the world to PNG children. The clipped English coming out of the radio and the sounds of the Port Moresby streets jar up against each other.
But it's rain.
Talk less for you.
Wait. Meru. It's meru.
Great. Thank you.
The ABC helped build the National Broadcasting Corporation headquarters in Port Moresby at the time of PNG's independence. Not much has changed since then. The building is decaying in the humidity. Many of the chairs are broken. There's a grand piano in the hallway that's never used and out of tune. The air conditioning is erratic and the ceilings leak.
NBC Radio, it's news time, 8 o'clock.
NBC Radio delivers hourly news bulletins, magazine-style programs and features. It sounds like a version of ABC Radio.
Good night, NBC News. I'm Kelvin Casper.
Good night, News. Lot of peace in me, Eric Taman.
These news bulletins are broadcast one after the other in the three main languages, English, Tok Pisin, and Motu. Here's veteran NBC broadcaster, Alan Arafai.
You should be able to speak three of them, I think, to come and work for the NBC, because like some people will not let go of Motu. They'll speak Motu and they're proud Motuans. So you should be able to converse with them when they come on radio and speak to you, you know. There are others that although understand English, but when you say it in Tok Pisin, they understand it a lot more better. So I think for Papua New Guinea, I think having one language, I don't think will work. I think you still need to maintain those three languages.
So you have all those people come together. And what do you have? Great big melting pot.
Former longtime broadcaster, Jimmy Vigneau.
We are still living in very close-knit societies, in families, in tribes, in clans, like you see in the highlands. We place our standards, I suppose, in terms of what had been done insofar as journalism is concerned by the expatriates who had come and worked here as journalists and who had taught us how to report. So we had been following that. But in a lot of instances, you will find that in doing so, you are actually going against some of the cultural areas that would be seen by your relatives or your people as trying to be a white man, you know.
My name is Sonny Karubaba. I work at the NBC Audio Archives.
I'm here in NBC's archives with Sonny. The work of the three archivists is overwhelming, and I can see why. Piles of tape, piles of paper, unpacked boxes.
All the way up there.
But it's the one spot in the building with the best air conditioning.
There's some music and some programs, I think. And mostly here would be... music that's written.
And Sonny's favourite?
I love Elvis records, yeah.
It's now or never. Come hold me tight.
These archives capture the glory days of the NBC in the first flush of PNG independence, when the broadcaster was full of promise.
It was huge, the NBC. It was a hugely important organisation. It's a bit of a shadow of its former self.
Australian journalist Geoffrey Hurd, who's lived in PNG since 1963.
Hobbled. It hasn't moved with the technology. But the technology's not there and the funding's not there to buy the technology and train people.
The media plays a very important role in the development of Papua New Guinea.
Alex Reaney is former editor of PNG's national newspaper, The Post Courier. And he's the current president of the National Press Council.
Without media, there's a risk of thousands of Papua New Guineans not having access to the best kind of information that would make a difference in their lives. And with the elections coming up, it's a very critical role. It's a critical time for the media now.
The time has come to make our stand.
because the choice is in
this month, there's a national election in Papua New Guinea, the nation's ninth since independence from Australia in 1975. And like in previous elections here, the question of corruption colours the mood. In Transparency International's 2016 Corruption Index, PNG's ranked in the bottom third.
People in their hearts of hearts really want to be together and make it.
This is Caroline Tiraman, who started with the NBC in Port Moresby and has worked with Radio Australia's Tok Pisin service for over 40 years.
As much as PNG tries, the issue of corruption is, some say, so embedded that people are struggling to just get their head over the, you know, water or something. But you can't turn back the clock now, I guess.
Papua New Guinea is a country rich in natural resources and receives large amounts of foreign investment and aid. But the money isn't going to the people who need it. Basic amenities like hospitals struggle for medicine, and the schools are lacking in books.
Every year, the districts, 89 districts, gets 10 million kina.
Veteran Papua New Guinean radio journalist Belinda Cora.
After you spend the 10 million kina in the year, last year, this year, then you need to equip. And then you tell them, okay, I spent this on water supply to the school, I've spent this on the road. But the issue is that when you go on ground, most of that is not there. It has not started or it's not finished. We have leaders quitting here for their funds, and then we have people still suffering.
A lot of Papua New Guineans out there don't know that their local member gets those grants on an annual basis. So consequently, they continue to miss out on government services, basic services in health and education, because when a local member visits them, like now, they're not in a position to ask, what's happened to our hospital? You got 10 million kina in the last financial year. When will we see our hospital being built? In the current election period, the NBC is the main provider of news and information.
NBC Radio, Real PNG.
But with its lack of resources, this is proving a difficult job.
Election 2017.
There is no discussion about whether we change the system of voting or not.
Senior NBC producer, Matilda Gavave.
This whole spectrum of different challenges, you know, in terms of ensuring that what we're getting is going on air. We're talking to our colleagues, but we're not talking to the people on the ground. We're not talking to the voters. We're not talking to the youths. We're not talking to all the other organisations that will be interested out of Moresby. That is not being captured in our current programs. Getting our transmission up and running, rehabilitation of our facilities. Comes down to funding.
Simulcast.
Right here on the NBC.
The choice is yours.
A lot of what we do before elections and after elections determines a lot for this country, because a lot of our Papua New Guineans still depend heavily on traditional media. And what we tell them, what we say to them, improves their choices. And being able to improve their choice would mean that you need to investigate more, you need to ask more hard questions, we need to pick up the phone, do the hard yards in order to improve the quality of news and, I think, improve our government.
For Jimmy Vinio, it's not easy being a journalist in Papua New Guinea.
A journalist's job in PNG is a real hard thing, but I'm surprised that we have survived this long.
How do you think we have survived this long? You have survived this long.
Well, I suppose we've been treading the line very carefully, putting our foot on one side, and when it gets burnt, we put it on the other side.
Okay. When you take this road, you go into the central province.
The longer I spend in PNG, the more complicated I find this country to be.
And that road takes you out into the central province.
Since independence, NBC has not had the funds to replace the major transmission facilities, which were shortwave transmitters.
Michael Samuga, Provincial Director at the National Broadcasting Corporation.
During the 80s, we received a substantial aid from the Japanese government, which saw the installation of 10 kilowatt shortwave transmitters in each of the 19 provincial stations. These transmitters have now gone past their operational capabilities, meaning that there's no parts on the market. They are no longer operationally viable to maintain and all that. So right now, as we speak, all of them are off. We have only three that are operational. That's in NBC Medang, NBC Southern Highlands, and NBC Milne Bay. But they're running on minimum power because engineers are quite aware that with full power, we can blow whatever parts that are left. And that will cease all the transmission of shortwave broadcast that we have. All the other radio stations are on FM. And FM is limited in range. It's a line of sight radio signal, and geographical features, distances have a lot of impact on that. And knowing how Papua New Guinea is, geographically speaking, it's very difficult getting your signal across hills, ridges, mountains, and all that. So we're very limited in terms of range. It's maximum about 40, 60 kilometers radius from where the station is located. And in some areas, we have been able, with little funds, to locate or install relay transmitters, which just help to progress the signal further.
Worked out what you're going to call this documentary yet?
Nah.
Radio Round Long Port Moresby.
Back in the car with NBC's Sonny Kurubaba and Steve Massey, I head to downtown Port Moresby to meet with broadcast engineer Wayne Wilson. In the early 1970s, he helped set up radio transmission in PNG.
For many years, the main coverage of Papua New Guinea was provided by shortwave service operating here out of Port Moresby. When I came up here, it was 10 kilowatt transmitters. And later they put in some much bigger transmitters, and now they haven't got any. So a lot of the rural areas are now not getting any broadcast coverage.
Transmission is the means by which we listeners hear the radio. The sound is sent out of the radio studio via broadcast waves to a transmitter. The transmitter is usually located on the outskirts of town and often on a mountain. The sound then travels across the airwaves from the transmitter to reach our ears. Without transmitters, there is no radio. So how are the Papua New Guineans in the villages getting their information? Wayne Wilson's colleague in Port Moresby, Susan Furman.
Mostly the remote areas, they don't have any. They don't get any information at all.
Word of mouth.
There's word of mouth.
People from the cities. Or from the towns.
Just call them and tell them over the phone or something. If they hear that there's a disaster somewhere, they call them to check what's happening, and then that's how information's passing.
PNG lies on what's called the Ring of Fire, an arc of seismic faults where earthquakes, tsunamis and volcanic eruptions are a regular threat.
She blew up at 7:45 that night. The dust is not white but black. When double wood came on, and by about 8 o'clock, branches of trees were so heavy.
We're listening to an oral history recording of when Rabaul on PNG's island of New Britain was hit by a volcanic eruption in 1937.
In the town of Rabaul,
almost 60 years later, after another major eruption, the town was moved, 29 kilometres down the road to Kokopo. Listening to this account, I wonder what would happen now. If an earthquake or eruption happened again, without a reliable radio service, would people be able to escape in time? I arrive at Kokopo Airport, where the air conditioning is broken, the ceiling is crumbling, and the clocks have all stopped at 4:37.
Okay, my name is Moses Kwako.
Director of Radio East New Britain, one of the NBC's 19 provincial radio stations.
I'm from back here, East New Britain province, especially from Rubal district. I live just around the base of one of the volcanoes that erupted in 1994, Mount Vulcan. About 2 years ago, the shortwave transmitter went off, leaving us to broadcast on shortwave, rather FM frequency. But we have a problem here because the FM frequency cannot cover the whole province. Unlike shortwave frequency, which can travel a long way. So we have a problem here.
In February this year, after 8 decades, the ABC switched off its shortwave service. The argument being that media's future was digital. And perhaps that's true in a country like Australia. But in PNG, data's expensive and so is electricity. 1 in 10 people can access the internet, 1 in 10 TV. There is a small number of people using social media, particularly Facebook, in order to share information.
Right now, I can't say that everyone is on, everyone meaning my close to 10 million people are on Facebook, but the people that are able, educated well enough to even have a phone and go on social media, yes, most of them are getting it online.
Journalist Belinda Cora is setting up the newsroom at the recently launched Click TV in Port Moresby. She sees the potential for social media to connect with audiences.
I think in the last 5 years, we've also had a number of leaders who have now Facebook pages, and I think that has brought them more closer to their people. They tag the leader in that page and they expect the leader to answer the question. You know, this road, it was supposed to be finished by this month. The contract was awarded to this person. And how come this road isn't finished? We want to know what happened to that 1.2, da 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 da. And then they're tagging the leader to answer. And of course the leader goes on and he answers, you know.
There's a lot of content that has been produced by the online community, by bloggers, that are very relevant to Papua New Guineans.
Journalist Alex Rainey recognises the benefits of online media. And for Papua New Guineans who can't afford expensive data plans, there's a text-only version of Facebook. But there are still limitations.
The challenge for the Papua New Guinean reader is how can you be able to judge whether the content that you get to consume was produced based on principles, you know, of facts, balance, objectivity, all the sort of boxes that you have to tick in a mainstream media newsroom. That's the biggest challenge for Papua New Guineans right now. But there is a shift happening. I think the only hurdle I see right now is the internet penetration rate in PNG. A very, very small population of Papua New Guineans are actually active on social media. Until internet penetration increases in PNG and until literacy rates improve in PNG, then we'll see Papua New Guineans appreciating more the sort of content that's available online and that is provided by bloggers.
The longer I'm in PNG, the clearer it becomes how essential radio, and in particular the NBC, is for the locals. As the public broadcaster, it has the role of holding governments to account, of raising the alarm that an earthquake's about to hit. But without adequate transmission coverage, the NBC is unable to do its job.
With the breakdowns in transmitter facilities and all that, our ability to continue to have that link with our rural communities and the remote communities, it's been really hard on us. Especially for broadcast offices who travel into the districts, spend nights, and then come back, produce the content, but at the back of their mind, they know that it won't be heard by the people who are supposed to hear them because of the reality of the coverage being very limited now.
Here is a special programs These are special programs. For this section here, you'll see it's question time, it's parliament.
Back in the NBC archives with Sunny Kurubaba, he rifles through the stack of tapes.
Do you have a favourite time that you like in this section? Is it the drama section or is it?
I like the string band music. It somehow, you know, reminds me of those days. Bring me back to those days, and I could imagine how peaceful they are.
I found out that radio is one of the most important part of my life, because I've been dreaming about becoming a radio broadcaster after listening to radio all this time.
From my house in Port Moresby, I look up to the hills where the transmission towers stand. The wind picks up, and the towers are suddenly hidden behind thick cloud. It starts to rain.
And that was 800 Words for Rain, the second of two programs about radio broadcasting in Papua New Guinea. It was produced by Camilla Hannon with sound engineer John Jacobs. And if you'd like to listen to the first part of 800 Words for Rain, then just go to the RN Earshot webpage or skip back one in your podcast feed. Now, just before I sign off today, I just want to urge you all to have a listen to RN's newest podcast. It's true crime. It's called Trace. And it's the story of Melbourne woman Maria James, who was found stabbed to death in her bookshop in 1980. The murder's never been solved, and as any detective will tell you, the unsolved cases are the ones that never stop haunting you. And it's here where Trace picks up the story, because it seems a piece of significant evidence was overlooked in the original investigation. I've heard episode one. It's an absolute cracker, and you don't want to miss it. You can find it on the RN website, the ABC radio app, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Let us know what you think. I'm Kirsty Melville. Thanks for listening to Earshot today. Catch you next time.